I want real solutions, not just campaign promises.
There's so much media bias and misinformation. I can't keep things straight.
I don't know who to trust. What am I supposed to do? Take my neighbor's word for it?
Why is it always the other guy's fault? What about accountability?
I'm split on issues, stuck between parties. What do I do now?
Did you know independent voters are America's largest voting bloc?
Yeah, but they totally feel politically homeless. Like, the two-party system just ignores them.
Independent voters, you're overlooked no more. This is our time to shine and stand together. You're listening to Independent Times.
In the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from this responsibility. I welcome it. I do not believe that any of us would exchange places with any other people or any other generation. The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
It's not the best of times, nor the worst, but these are undoubtedly independent times. Welcome to Independent Times, the podcast for politically homeless independent voters navigating our polarized world. I'm your host, Lisa Singer, and I'm so grateful you could join us today. In 1790, members of religious minorities wrote to President George Washington asking, "What kind of country would the new United States be?" Having known only theocracies and monarchies, they were confused and deeply concerned. Washington responded to numerous faith groups, including Roman Catholics, Baptists, and Quakers, personally reassuring them of their protection. In his famous letter to the Thoreau Synagogue of Newport, Rhode Island, he articulated the core covenant. Happily, the governments of the United States, which gives to bigotry no sanction, to persecution no assistance, requires only that they who live under its protection should demean themselves as good citizens. America had made a clear bargain. The government promised protection and liberty as long as we acted as good citizens. For generations, this concept was the bedrock of our republic. Yet with trust in our government now at a record low of 22%, we must ask a critical question. What exactly is our civic duty to fix this mess? We're joined today by my co-hosts, award-winning journalist, host, and producer of Fox 24 News Now, Leila Gulen, and Emmy award-winning television news host, Brian Gallo. Welcome.
Thanks, Lisa. You know, I'm glad we're tackling this. The conversation about low trust can be so discouraging, right? It's time to talk about what we, the people, can do about it.
Exactly. You know, apathy is the enemy of the republic. You know, if we want to restore trust, we have to start by restoring our own sense of purpose as citizens.
You're absolutely right. But before we dig into what we can do today, Leila, can you take a moment to put this into historical perspective for us?
Yeah, Lisa, I'd be glad to. You know, and what an extraordinary time it is, Lisa. Just think about it. For 1,700 years from the fall of the Roman Republic until our founding, civilization was ruled by kings and queens and emperors. You know, the very idea of self-rule was a historical footnote. Then suddenly, just 249 years ago, our forefathers came together and they said this: "No more kings. We know a better way with self-rule. We're going back to the spirit of Roman Greece, but we will take all of their mistakes and make it better."
It's a miracle, really. A country founded on a dream, the American dream of equality, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But here we are, and we have to ask a difficult question. If this is the design of our country, why do so many not participate? Why don't all 340 million Americans actively engage in their country's self-rule by voting, petitioning their government, protesting when things get really bad, and speaking up?
I think it's the ultimate paradox. This beautiful, independent car of self-rule was designed for us to drive to make our lives better. But if you just let it sit in the garage, you know, it's not going to get you anywhere. The freedom to make our own choices, the price is civic engagement. It's paying taxes, driving on the right side of the road, and taking responsibility for the country we live in. We have to remind our listeners of something fundamental. What we appreciate appreciates, and what we don't appreciate depreciates.
That's a really powerful point. A study from Georgetown University on voter turnout found that many non-voters, particularly those who identify as independent, feel a lack of political efficacy. What that means in plain English is that they believe that their vote won't make a difference because the system is too broken or nothing is ever going to change for them. Thomas Jefferson once said, "The price of freedom is eternal vigilance." He knew that a virtuous and engaged citizenry was the most important ingredient for the American experiment.
Yeah, I'd like to say something here. So, you know, that's precisely the mindset that the founders warned us about. A king would love nothing more than to take power, as Jefferson warned us. A king would love to take away our access to free speech and a free press, as Madison knew all too well. And a king would love to take away our right to freedom of religion, as Washington knew all too well. The price of our liberty is eternal vigilance and constant engagement. You know, we have to make our best case to show independent voters, now the largest voting bloc, that they have the power to keep this country a democracy of self-rule.
Well, democracy is hard. A dictatorship is somewhat easier. And we need to do all we can to remind independent voters that even though we have no organized power at this time, that the independent voter movement is relatively new, we can still make a real difference. And it reminds me of a famous Margaret Mead quote that I learned on the West Wing TV show, which can give our listeners some really good inspiration. Here's a clip of President Bartlet quoting Margaret Mead while swearing in a new staffer, Will Bailey.
Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. President. There's a promise that I ask everyone who works here to make. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful and committed citizens can change the world. Do you know why?
It's the only thing that ever has.
Our founding fathers were the independents of their time. And they literally risked their lives in defiance of the King of England to create this country. They could have been killed. Every single one of them could have been killed for signing the Declaration of Independence. But they did it anyway, because they wanted to stand up and say, no more, no more tyranny. And there have been so many in America who have carried that torch. Frederick Douglass is the first that comes to mind. He spoke out constantly, consistently, pleading with President Lincoln to end slavery. The 1969 Stonewall activists, they were independents, and they're the ones who sparked the fight for LGBTQ equality and rights. Rosa Parks, another great example. She was an independent woman, just literally sitting alone on a bus, refusing to get up and demanding an end to segregation. Ida B. Wells, famous journalist, she exposed the lynchings in the South. She could have been killed, and she did it anyway. And she demanded that the government do something about it and step in. And it's kind of crazy to think about this, that you have to remind elected officials as often as we do that they are there to serve us and they are accountable to us. But it is the truth. And it's the independents throughout history who have made the progress that we enjoy and experience today. And I would argue that today, more than ever, it's the independent voters who need to carry that torch. They're the ones
who are going to be able to demand the much needed reforms and changes that we need in this country. And let's remind the government to keep helping us move forward. And we're not asking for any handouts. We're just asking for a level playing field.
Yeah, yeah. It reminds me of what Thomas Jefferson once said, the care of human life and happiness and not their destruction is the first and only legitimate object of good government.
That is, without a doubt, the clearest and simplest definition I've ever heard of what the government's role is. It doesn't get simpler than this. Their job is our well-being and our happiness, period. Mic drop moment for sure. But of course, we're doing this episode today to remind all of our listeners that it's our job to hold the representatives accountable. And the only way to do that is by voting and by using our First Amendment rights to speak up peacefully, to demand that they represent us, or they're going to ignore us. I mean, it's just that simple. Unless we vote and unless we speak up and use our First Amendment rights, we will be ignored. And it reminds me of this incredible story about Frederick Douglass visiting President Lincoln at the White House. Dave Chappelle shared this story when he hosted Saturday Night Live the first Saturday night after Donald Trump won his first term back in 2016. I know we have a lot to get to, but I've got to play that clip. It's incredible.
A few weeks ago, I went to the White House for a party. It was the first time I'd been there in many years. And it was very exciting. And BET had sponsored the party. So everyone there was black. And it was beautiful. I walked through the gates. You know, I'm from Washington, so I saw the bus stop, well, the corner where the bus stop used to be, where I used to catch the bus to school and dream about nights like tonight. It was a really, really beautiful night. And at the end of the night, everyone went into the West Wing of the White House, and it was a huge party. And everybody in there was black except for Bradley Cooper for some reason. And on the walls were pictures of all the presidents of the past. Now, I'm not sure if this is true, but to my knowledge, the first black person that was officially invited to the White House was Frederick Douglass. They stopped him at the gates. Abraham Lincoln had to walk out himself and escort Frederick Douglass into the White House. And it didn't happen again, as far as I know, until Roosevelt was president. When Roosevelt was president, he had a black guy over and got so much flack from the media that he literally said, "I will never have a nigger in this house again." I thought about that, and I looked at that room, and I saw all those black faces in Bradley, and I saw... and I saw how happy everybody was. These people who had been historically disenfranchised. And it made me feel hopeful, and it made me feel proud to be an American, and it made me very happy about the prospects of our country. So, in that spirit, I'm wishing Donald Trump luck, and I'm gonna give him a chance, and we, the historically disenfranchised, demand that he give us one too. Thank you very much. We've got a great show tonight.
That's it. Douglass showed us how it's done. He showed us how to demand inclusion. He showed up at the White House. He showed up day after day speaking out against slavery. And it made a big difference. And it's always people like Douglass. It's always those independent voices that keep our government true to its purpose.
That is such a powerful idea. And that freedom, that bargain, is laid out beautifully in the First Amendment. You know, the right to vote is central, but the First Amendment is the operating manual for a functioning democracy. You know, it gives us five very powerful tools: freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, the right to peaceably assemble, and the right to petition the government. So these are the superpowers of the American citizen, whether we realize it or not.
Oh, I love the way you put that, superpowers of the American citizen. So let's look at how Americans have used these tools to fulfill their civic responsibilities and hold our elected officials accountable and basically demand that the country move forward and it becomes a better country, a more perfect union, as Washington said. So before we dive into some examples, can you both just take a moment and help our listeners clarify the difference between civic duty and civic responsibility?
Yeah, I'll jump in real quick. I think duty feels more formal, right? It's the things we are expected to do as a matter of course for the Republic to function. Things like voting, obeying the law, serving on a jury if called, and paying taxes. These are non-negotiable pillars. That's my opinion.
Yeah. And responsibility, to me, feels more personal and proactive. It's the stuff that goes beyond the bare minimum. It's about staying informed, not just by tuning into the news, but by seeking out different perspectives. It's about engaging with your community, attending town hall meetings, or even volunteering for a cause that you believe in. A responsible citizen understands that the government is not some distant entity. It's a reflection of us. It should be a reflection of us. It's the community of people doing things for the common good.
I could not agree more. Community and real engagement are everything. Last week, my neighbor won our village's beautification award for her gorgeous landscaping. So I went to the town hall meeting to cheer her on, and I got to meet the mayor, watch the Rotary Club get honored. Two firemen were sworn in, their families were there, and I clapped as they handed out awards to 31 homes, including hers. I walked out of there on an absolute cloud nine. It was such a sweet reminder of how lucky we are to live in a country where we can just show up to a local meeting and see the good, tangible things happening right in front of us. And yet, most days, most Americans don't feel this way at all. Most days, it feels like the bigger system is rigged, like no one in power is really listening, and it's so easy to check out. So many people genuinely believe it doesn't matter who wins, Republican or Democrat, nothing ever changes. Trust in government, as we talked about last week, is at a historic low of 22%. And for many independent voters, that hopelessness is crushing. That's why I went back to this incredible Frontline PBS documentary on the 2020 election, and I pulled a few clips. These are everyday voters, left, right, and in between, putting that exhaustion and frustration into their own words, but also that quiet, stubborn refusal to completely walk away. Take a listen.
I'm tired of people voting for the lesser of two evils. You know, voting Democrat because it's not Trump, or voting Republican because it's not Biden.
Wouldn't really matter who got in office. I feel like they're one of the same. I think our culture is going to stay divided. The division that has been created here recently is something that we've regressed to. That's going to take generations to recover. I think our culture is going to be horribly scarred by this. And I don't know what it's going to be blamed on in the end or how it's going to be spun, but I think our culture in a whole has gone down a deep, deep dark hole.
My faith in the government has grown further and further apart. I honestly have withdrawn myself from paying as much attention to our politics and policies and things that are trying to be pushed through government just because I'm sick of it. Honestly, I'm sick of it. I don't have enough faith in any of them to do what they say or to support my values or the beliefs of others that are going to be beneficial to myself or my family.
Our instinct is just leave me alone. I just want to be left alone. I want to raise my children. I want to live in my home. I want to be a Christian. I want to be able to attend my church. And I don't want the government to interfere with anything that I'm doing. Just leave me alone. The philosophy of leave me alone, ironically, requires that we not leave the government alone. That's the reality.
And all we need to do is go out there and vote.
But history in our country shows engagement does work. When you think things couldn't get worse, they get better when Americans come out and vote and petition and protest and, like, use their voices. It's proven.
Yeah, and we have decades of proof that it works. Let's look at a couple of incredible success stories powered by these rights. Take the right to peaceably assemble, for instance. The civil rights movement in the 1960s was a masterclass in this. From the marches in Selma to the sit-ins at lunch counters, people use their right to protest, to force a nation to confront its conscience. Their assembly wasn't just a gathering. It was a demand for justice that led to the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, two incredibly important pillars to our society. It fundamentally changed America.
Exactly, Layla. Those marches, those sit-ins, they didn't just make noise. They changed laws and they changed hearts. And nobody explained why nonviolent protest is so powerful better than Dr. King himself. Here's a rare 1961 BBC interview that I found. Listen to how clearly and calmly he lays out why peaceful assembly is the ultimate weapon for a citizen who feels powerless.
And on the 5th of December in 1955, a Negro woman was arrested, a Mrs. Rosa Parks, for refusing to give up her seat for a boarding white male passenger. Pretty soon after she was arrested, the word got around the Montgomery community, and there was a spontaneous reaction. I think I could say safely that more than 99% of the Negro people of Montgomery rose up with a bit of indignation, a righteous indignation, I would say. And this led to the bus boycott. The Negro citizens decided not to ride the buses until these conditions were changed. They asked me to serve as a spokesman and the president of the Montgomery Improvement Association. And from this time, I found myself in a leadership position in the civil rights struggle.
And the bus boycott was, of course, a startling success under your leadership.
Yes, we struggled for 381 days. But at the end of that, we returned to thoroughly integrated buses, and they are integrated today in Montgomery.
I understand exactly why you believe in nonviolence, but have you found it easy to persuade your followers that nonviolence is really the best method? I mean, there must be a great temptation to take a poke back at a white man who hits you.
That is true, that it is difficult at times to convince people that this is the best way. And I guess it is difficult for all of us not to retaliate. But on the whole, I have been amazed at the tremendous response that we have gained when we have called for nonviolent action. I look back over Montgomery and think of the fact that for all of these days, 381 days, more than 99 9/10% of the Negro citizens participated in the boycott. They confronted harassing experiences. They confronted physical violence. And never did they retaliate with a single act of physical violence. And the same is true of the student sit-in movement, which included thousands of students. Not a single, retaliated with physical violence. So that even though it is difficult, I think we have been able to get this method over in a most significant way.
And think about the right to a free press. The role of journalists in the Watergate scandal is a perfect example. While the government was covering up crimes and abusing its power, their reporting led to the resignation of a president and reminded everyone that no one is above the law.
Those are incredible foundational moments in our history. Thank you for sharing and reminding us. And what about the right to petition government? Was there a major success story there in our history?
Yeah. I'll jump in here. Absolutely. The campaign for women's suffrage was a decades-long effort that relied heavily on petitioning. You know, for years, women across the country tirelessly collected signatures, and they sent thousands upon thousands of petitions to Congress. They used this right to show lawmakers the widespread public support for their cause, even though they couldn't vote themselves, if you can imagine. Their collective voice combined with other grassroots efforts eventually led to the passage of the 19th Amendment, which enfranchised women and doubled the size of the American electorate virtually overnight.
We also have to remember that, in general, progress isn't a given. It's the result of countless people fulfilling their civic duties and responsibilities. And when we lose sight of that, we start to take our freedoms for granted. It's a phenomenon that's so, so uniquely American. We are such a nation of impatient people.
Yeah, impatient for sure. My goodness. Well, that's where the global context comes in. You know, we're so focused on our imperfections and our backsliding that we forget to look at the rest of the world. This is very important. The majority of the population does not live in a full democracy where they can speak freely or assemble peacefully or vote for their leaders. You know, they can't demand accountability from their government without risking their lives, for crying out loud. You know, we have to remember how very precious these freedoms are, even with our imperfections.
That's another podcast. All right, let me jump in. Pew Research numbers confirm this. We are an outlier. We have a political system that, despite its many flaws, gives us the power to change it. We have to remember that the price of living with these freedoms is staying informed, engaged, and most importantly, voting. That's our civic duty. That's the bargain.
And that bargain is under constant threat. It's not just a history lesson. It's a living, breathing fight. We've seen a wave of recent legislative efforts to restrict voting in this country. Since the 2020 election, at least 30 states have enacted 79 restrictive voting laws. A vast majority of those states are Republican-controlled state houses and state senates. We've also seen attempts at the federal level to pass legislation that would expand voting rights, but were killed by partisan opposition. For example, the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act were both championed by Democrats, but were both blocked by Republican-led filibusters in the Senate.
Yeah, and the Supreme Court has also weighed in. They've issued rulings that have weakened the protections of the Voting Rights Act. In the landmark 2013 case of Shelby County versus Holder, the court's conservative wing voted to eliminate the requirement that states with a history of discrimination must get federal approval before changing their voting laws.
Exactly, Layla. That one Supreme Court decision in 2013 didn't just tweak the Voting Rights Act. It gutted the single most powerful protection it had. Overnight, states with long histories of discrimination were free to change voting laws without any federal oversight. The effects were immediate, and they're still being felt today. Here's a quick, clear breakdown of what Shelby County versus Holder actually did and why so many people say it opened the floodgates.
In 2013, the Supreme Court gutted the 1965 Voting Rights Act in Shelby County versus Holder. The conservative justice's ruling stripped the pre-clearance requirement that states with a history of voter suppression must receive clearance from the federal government before enacting any new voting laws. The court essentially ruled that the racial voter suppression that the Voting Rights Act was intended to guard against no longer existed. In the years since, the very same states that were previously subjected to preclearance have passed a wave of voter suppression laws. Unsurprisingly, these laws disproportionately affect voters of color.
Since the ruling, several states that used to have to get preclearance under the Voting Rights Act have passed laws that have made it more difficult to vote, getting rid of things like early voting and same-day voter registration. 5 years after the ruling, around 1,000 polling places have been closed in the country. Most of these closed polling places were in counties with African-American majority populations. One study also found that jurisdictions that used to have to get preclearance under the Voting Rights Act have dramatically kicked more folks off voter registration lists. And many of those taken off voter registration lists don't even know they've been kicked off.
We saw a flood after the Shelby decision, a flood of laws designed to make it hard just to show up at the polls. And you only get redress after the election is done.
These are laws that on their face may seem benign, but the effect of it is to limit the power, the voting power of minorities.
Shelby County versus Holder really drives home that the fight for equal access to the ballot is still very much alive. We've made incredible strides, no doubt. Black Americans, women, 18-year-olds, all finally getting the vote. But the work is nowhere near finished. And Dr. King said it best, the oppressor never gives freedom voluntarily. The oppressed have to demand it. And to remind us just how urgent and how righteous that demand was, here's President Lyndon Johnson addressing Congress in March of 1965, just days after Bloody Sunday on the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Listen to the way he claims the Voting Rights Act, not as a Democratic Party cause, not as a Southern cause, but as an American cause.
There is no constitutional issue here. The command of the Constitution is plain. There is no moral issue. It is wrong, deadly wrong, to deny any of your fellow Americans the right to vote in this country. There is no issue of states' rights or national rights. There is only the struggle for human rights. I recognize that from outside this chamber is the outraged conscience of a nation, the grave concern of many nations, and the harsh judgment of history on our acts. But even if we pass this bill, the battle will not be over. What happened in Selma is part of a far larger movement which reaches into every section and state of America. It is the effort of American Negroes to secure for themselves the full blessings of American life. Their cause must be our cause too, because it's not just Negroes, but really, it's all of us who must overcome the crippling legacy of bigotry and injustice. And we shall overcome.
That speech still hits me hard in the chest every single time. And here we are, 60 years later, still fighting the next chapter of the same battle. Today, the most significant remaining barrier to full ballot access affects us, the fastest growing group of voters in America, independents. Right now, in 22 states, roughly 27 million of us are entirely shut out of the taxpayer-funded presidential primaries simply because we refuse to join a political party. When we finally break open those primaries and bring in ranked choice voting, we will see the political environment change overnight. It is you, the independent voter, who will heal our fractured nation. We need you more now than ever to rise up and make sure that it happens. And nobody has been swinging the voting rights hammer longer, harder, or more selflessly than our independent hero of the week, the League of Women Voters. Born in 1920 out of the women's suffrage victory, still 100% nonpartisan, still grassroots, still showing up every single day with tools like vote411.org, so every single voter has the facts, no spin, no agenda. Let's hear straight from them why, more than 100 years later, they're still in the fight to protect your vote.
How amazing that the spirit of the suffrage movement and the shock of the First World War came this great idea that a nonpartisan civic organization could provide the tools that the public needed to advance our democracy.
A wise League leader once said that the success of democracy doesn't depend on a few persons who do great things, but on many persons who do small things faithfully.
In the 1970s, the League started to sponsor televised presidential debates and continued to provide a nonpartisan forum for the public to learn about candidates every 4 years. The League still sponsors local debates to this day.
Welcome, everybody, to our 2019 debates. My name is Alice Pernick. I'm co-president of the League of Women Voters of Larchmont and Mamaroneck. Our mission is to empower voters and defend democracy. The League of Women Voters is nonpartisan and neither supports nor opposes any of the candidates you'll see tonight.
And still continues voter education. This marks the beginning of 100 years of the League of Women Voters and voter education in America.
The League will be known as the place to find information about candidates and issues. I want to continue to work so that League is known as the place to find great information.
We are going to help this country of ours with civil discourse. We are going to educate more than we already do. We are going to be the force that brings people together to talk in a civilized way about issues. That's what we're going to do.
Thank you so much, Brian and Layla. This has been a fantastic conversation. It's so, so important to remember that progress requires a great deal of effort, but it is still possible.
All right. Keep digging for the truth, Lisa. You're so good at it.
Yeah, thanks. And I always say, question everything.
We open this episode with a tricky question. What's our share of the mess our politics is in right now? And what are we actually going to do about it? Well, here's your assignment starting today. Four simple things. Number one, make sure you're registered to vote and help one friend do the same. Number two, put every upcoming election in your district on your calendar. Local, state, and the midterms. All of it. Number three, call or email your state representatives and tell them you want open primaries and ranked choice voting. Be polite, be loud, and be relentless. Number four, subscribe to at least one real newspaper, local or national, so you're never flying blind again. We have all this information and more on our website, independenttimes.news. Thanks again, Brian and Layla, for joining us today. And a big thanks to our listeners for joining our community at Independent Times, where politically homeless voters find clarity in a polarized world. You're not alone in this journey. Until next time, please follow, like, subscribe, share, and keep charting your own path.